Blog Talk Radio.
I'd like to say good evening to each and every one. Today you're here with Dr. Harris. Dr. Harris, Black Lives Matter show, broadcasting here out of Fresno, California, better known as Mississippi, Fresno. Well, I would like to say happy Black History Month to everyone across the world. I'd like to give a shout out to Sister Christina there. Shout out to you. And what else we have here? Sister May, shout out to you. I'm having technical difficulty getting on at exactly 8 o'clock, but I eventually got on the line. But it's Black History Month. Wow, what did that really mean? Black History Month. You can call in to 619-924-0872. You just want to give a shout out or call in, or you can listen online on the phone or on the computer like you all good folks are doing now. Christina, I'd like to say proud of you. 21-day challenge. I'll be starting my 21-day challenge in March. And so just happy I went out to Central. You see my shirt here, my son. He's a cheerleader, senior this year at Central West High School. Happy Black History. All right. Yeah, I'm been reflecting, Christina, on what Black History Month means right now to me. But nevertheless, we'll get into that. But I went out to Buchanan today. My son, they took second place today. Some of them did not do so well for the cheerleading. But anyway, they took second place. You know, it's good to take first, second, but we always like to take first. He was a little down after the competition, but I was proud of him. His daddy was there, you know, right on the front lines cheerleading for him. And that's what our children need. They need our dads. They need all of us, to tell you the truth. But, you know, we need to be there for our children, you know, no matter what age, creed, or color. And it was a good event. Schools from all over the valley was there. I believe next month he's going to Anaheim for a national cheer competition. And daddy will be there, too. Daddy will be there, too. And who was that? Lawrence. Hey, Lawrence. And so, you know, that's what we do. You know, we be there for our children. And I was there for him today. And I had a professional video photographer there who was videotaping. We're working on getting him into a Black historical college. And so he's had a great year. His year is coming up to an end. He will be graduating this year. And so we're happy. You know, it hasn't been a smooth road, but it's been a good road. So anyway, I just want to give a shout out to all of our freedom fighters across the world. My good friends down in Oakland and San Francisco and L.A. Also to the Poor People's Campaign. We'll be having our state convention here in Fresno next Saturday. We'll be having folks from all over California to come to Fresno so that we can organize for the rest of the year. The Poor People's Campaign is what Dr. King has started before he was assassinated. And so Reverend Barber from the East Coast has reactivated it. And so I'm the representative here from Fresno. And so it's a lot of heavy lifting, a lot of work that still needs to be done locally as well as across the country. A lot of things happen here, you know, first of the year. We had the government shut down, which laid off a lot of folk from government jobs. So we have a lot of heavy lifting to do. And those who know me, I'm an international civil rights leader. I have traveled across the world dealing with injustice, racism, fight for justice, equality, and freedom for our people. So, you know, it's been very challenging, I've learned a lot over the years, just passing my knowledge down to our young people. You can call in to 6. Our number is 619-924-0872, or you can just listen in on the computer. So this month is Black History Month. I just wanted to come on a little bit. We've been having shows all week. You can go to the archives. I do have a Facebook page, Dr. Harris Black. As a matter of fact, I have several Facebook pages. Oh, man, several. I don't know how I keep them all up. But I do have a Facebook for Dr. Harris Black Lives Matter Show. Also, my regular Facebook I have that you're on now. I have a Facebook for my church, Facebook for my civil rights organization, Facebook for my freedom school. All those Facebooks are connected to websites. But anyway, what do Black History mean? I mean, what is really Black History Month? Wow. What is Black History Month? You know, I've been going through a lot of YouTube links this evening, all last week, and just listening to the ancestors on what they have been through they went through. People like Fannie Lou Hamer, you know, Black Wall Street, you know, Nat Turner, Marcus Garvey, you know, the list just goes on, you know. And what's sad is for me, at the age of 48, that we are still dealing with the same symptoms of racism, the same symptoms of injustice that is still going on that Dr. King dealt with in the 1960s. You know, things that the Black Panther Party dealt with back in the 1960s. Has it gotten better or has it gotten worse? You know, that's what I try to look at and hoping that things will get better. But the reality is things are not getting better. It's getting actually worse. Shout out there to Nick. Hey, glad you tuned back in tonight. Things have gotten worse than better. From the education system to the mass incarceration and to the health piece, to the police brutality, to, you know, black-on-black crime, to the, you know, how the U.S. government put drugs in our community. Hey, Captain, thank you for tuning in. What is Black history? I mean, I was listening to someone the other day, and they said, well, you know, Black history, you know, is the shortest month out of all the months, out of the, you know, 12 months we received the shortest. I guess it's better to have something than nothing. But then I said, well, shouldn't I celebrate Black history every month? Or should I, or are we just highlighting it for this month, but we celebrate it every day? You know, I teach from the rostrum, you know, I preach from the rostrum. You know, it's every day. You know, I guess I can appreciate people wanting to take, what, let me see, what is it? Let me see. The 28 days, okay. I guess, you know, the 28 days, we'll celebrate it, highlight it, 28 days. But I think the reality is that we need to highlight ourselves every day. And I think that's the message that I want to push to all of those who follow me or, you know, network with me, is that there's, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's going on right now across America. And it's like, you know, we have to take ownership of the good, the bad, and the ugly, you know, and we have to hold people accountable. You know, we have to hold ourselves accountable, first of all. We have to hold our next door neighbor accountable, second of all. And we have to hold our government accountable, you know. I would think that the U.S. government has done so many bad things to us as a people. For instance, take Tulsa, Oklahoma, 1921. You know, our ancestors built over 30-some towns all across America. Just here in the Central Valley, San Joaquin Valley, there were towns built here by our people, but you wouldn't even know it right now. I mean, people talk about Allensworth, which is the first Black, you know, town that was, that Colonel Allensworth had created, and, you know, they rediverted the water, and it killed Colonel Allensworth in L.A., and the city just died out. So now it's an amusement park, but you have Keviston, you have Centerville, you have, you know, all these, it's like maybe 10 different little spots in the valley that were Black towns. And there was a brother who did his thesis on the black towns here in the San Joaquin Valley. But right now, when you go there, they're highly, highly populated Latino folk. And, you know, it's like, where is our history here in the valley? You know, where is it? You know, it's getting, it's lost. That's where it is. It's lost. And I think as black folk, we need to do a better job at preserving our history and taking ownership of our history and making sure that our history is not lost in time. And it's lost. I hate to tell you it's lost. I mean, in the Freedom School, you know, this year we really, I mean, we teach the principles of Kwanzaa. You know, Kwanzaa is to be taught, you know, the seven principles. You know, every month we're taking a principle and we're really teaching our kids, you know, boom, boom, boom. And then once we get to seven, hey, we start over at one and go over it again. But I think that if you really look at Kwanzaa and the principles and what it means and what it says, I think that you will see that it has a purpose, you know. But what is Black History Month? I mean, we say it, but what really is it? You know, Happy Black History Month. I mean, what? I mean, if you tell a kid that, I mean, what does that mean? You know, so are we really taking out the time to really explain to our children, you know, that you have a rich history? You come from kings and queens. You know, you didn't come from thugs and hoodlums. You know, Tulsa, Oklahoma, 1921 was a very thriving community. Very, very thriving community. You know, our ancestors built stores. They had grocery stores. They had post office. They had taxi services. They had, you know, airlines. They had, you know, pharmacies. They had movie theaters. They had all that stuff in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And it was all destroyed. It was burnt to the ground by racist Ku Klux Klan, part with, that was with the U.S. government. And they dropped bombs on our people. And many, many people would die. They were murdered, killed, for no reason. And we don't have anything to show for that today. And it bothers me that we sit here, you know, as if everything is normal and everything is okay. No, it's not okay. No, it's not normal. You know, right now, you should be having a book, some book. Go to the library, buy a book, order a book, and sitting down with your child, going over what Black history is. Take one of the ancestors and go over it with them. Quit. Stop thinking that the public school system is going to teach your child about Black history. They're not going to teach your child about Black history. They're going to teach your child a bunch of lies. They're going to teach your child that Christopher Columbus discovered America. That's the biggest lie I ever seen, I ever heard of. The Native Americans was here. The Moors. You know, educate them, teach them, and nurture them, and make sure they're smart. No, they're not going to do that. I mean, it's just dumbfounded with the behavior of some of our people that we have become such a lazy people that we have 28 days in 1 month, the shortest month of the year. What are we going to do about that? You know, day one is what? Day two. February 2nd. Day two. Yesterday, we played Malcolm X, Ballad of the Bullet. Ballad of the Bullet. That's what we played yesterday. The whole entire piece. The Ballad or the bullet. And you can go back and listen to it and understand what Malcolm was dealing with this country. Come on, people, get off the couch, go to the library, order some books, sit down with your child. And let me tell you this, all due respect to Dr. King. Black history is not just about Dr. King. Okay? Yes, he did a lot, but there was other people that done just as great as work as Dr. King. But America want you pushing Dr. King, but don't push the Black Panther Party. Don't push Marcus Garvey. Don't push Megan Everett. Don't push Fannie Lou Hamer. Don't push Shirley Chisholm. Don't push Thurgood Marshall. Don't push Black Wall Street. Don't push Nat Turner. And the list just goes on and on and on and on and on. But all you want to do is just keep saying Dr. King and that's it. No, this movement was bigger than Dr. King. And Dr. King did what he did, and he did it good. He did it perfect. But it's not just about Dr. King. Dr. King, oh, he was nonviolent. Yeah, anybody would like to deal with anybody that's nonviolent. But that's how Dr. King, that's how God wanted Dr. King to push the movement at that time. But it doesn't mean that you don't teach your children about what the purpose of the Black Panther Party was, because there would be no Head Start without the Black Panther Party. There would be no lunch program without the Black Panther Party. See, what's crazy is the Black Panther Party in Oakland, California, created the blueprint for liberation for Black folk. That's what they did. But yet they were assassinated for taking control of their community. So the question becomes, when do we stop? So this is a challenge to everybody. When do we stop and start teaching our children the truth? I'm just asking, when do we stop? Is it that you don't have time? You don't care? You're going to let the public school system teach your children about who they are, where they come from? Or do we get off our lazy behinds and go to the bookstore and purchase some books or go online and have our children look at these documentaries and then we sit down and we debrief with them in regards to what they see and what they read? That's where we're at, folks. So if we're going to say Happy Black History Month, first of all, what's happy about it? I mean, so I get it that we say Happy Black History Month, but the question that I'm asking is, what is it for us to be happy about when all of the freedom fighters was assassinated? If they wasn't assassinated, they were murdered. If they wasn't murdered, they was put in jail. So the question I ask you, when we say Happy Black History Month, what are we really saying we're happy about? Are we saying we're happy because everybody's dead? Are we saying, well, there we go again, folks. They knocked me offline again. Well, this is getting old, you know, about them knocking me offline. I'm not sure why they're doing that. But it's cool. It's cool. It's cool. I'm not gonna trip. So what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna be quiet because it seems like Facebook is just constantly cutting me off. So I'm gonna just go ahead and play this video if I can. Maybe they won't knock me off again just playing a video. So let's see what happens here.
This is not theoretical. I just... Mr. Wanza Kanjufu with his penetrating presentation of Countering the Conspiracy to Destroy Black Boys.
There's no topic that concerns me more than the one on the conspiracy to destroy black boys. And the reason is my little boys are in preschool and primary grades. They're very innocent and very enthusiastic about learning. But something happens to that, and we need to find out what that is. My youngest son is on the cover of this particular book, and I would like for him to grow up to be a man. Like many of you already told me, that you have sons and male students as well. Now, there's two parts of the conspiracy, Volume 1, and this is Volume 2. In Volume 1, we raise four questions. First question is, when did the conspiracy start? Who is against black boys? Why is there a conspiracy against them? And what exactly is the conspiracy? That's in Volume 1. In Volume 2, we look at the relationships between mothers and their sons that must be studied. We also must look at female teachers and black male students that must also be studied. We must look at some case studies. In other words, many of us are doing a very good job developing black boys to be men. What is it that some of us are doing that others are not doing? And then last but not least, a program called the Rites of Passage into Manhood. See, it used to be we knew when black boys became men, but now many of us don't know when we're men. How much reefer we smoke, how much wine we drink, how many babies we make. Until black men spell it out to black boys what it means to be a man, this conspiracy will continue. But let's go back to Volume 1. When did it start? And as we begin to look at that, I want to also share with you why we call it a conspiracy to destroy black boys. You see, contrary to belief at birth, there are more black boys born in the world than there are girls. It's close, but it's 1.03 black boys born in the world to 1.0 black girls. Hear me clearly. At birth, black boys outnumber black girls 1.03 to 1.0. A brief 18 years later, it is now 1.0 available, and that's the key word, available black men, to 1.8 available black women. Almost two adult women for every one adult man. Now, the only question that should be going through your minds right now is what happened? We keep raising the wrong question. We keep asking, why do black men hang on corners? Why do black men lack direction? Well, if you ask this question, you're asking the question 18 to 30 years too late. It is not a conspiracy to destroy black men. It's a conspiracy to destroy black boys. If you destroy them as a boy, you'll never become a man. And I can look around a room and tell you, know where are they? If they are not available to black women, where are they? Call the room. In jail, there are 329,000 brothers in prison right now. One of every four brothers will go to prison. Where else? Or death. There's numerous ways that we die. There's homicide, suicide, drugs, war, high blood pressure, and the leading killer among black men, lung cancer. Our love for cigarettes, especially Cool. Smoke them all day long, that exact same way, Cool. Where else? We have prison, death. What else would make us unavailable to black women? Yes, homosexuality. As you said earlier, one of every 9 men in this country are homosexual. Where else? Yes. Okay, so institutionalization, and there's not only in terms of hospitals, but also mental institutions, and of course, when they get released, many times being homeless. There's still one other large popular area. Zimbi?
Intermarried white women.
Okay, interracial marriage. Now I want to pause here for a moment, because you would think if anybody is going to marry outside the race, it would be black women. You got two black women for every one black man. But as Zimbi pointed out, it's exactly the opposite. There are 164,000 interracial marriages, of which 116,000 are brothers. That means 48,000 sisters. It's almost a 2-to-1 ratio of black men to black women marrying outside the race. But remember, as you said in the earlier workshop, if the definition of beauty is light skin, long hair, and blue eyes, why stop with Renee, the light skin sister? Why not get you the real thing? That's some serious problems here. And then black men tell me, I can't find a black woman to understand me. You mean out of 20 million black women, you can't find one to understand you? You don't need a white woman, you need a psychiatrist. But that's another workshop on relationships. But I just want to share with you, we got some very serious problems. But to tease this audience, black women are tired of being by themselves. And in the earlier issue of Essence magazine, the article said, guess who's coming to dinner now? Black women are tired of being by themselves. In other words, brothers, you can't have it both ways. You can't have two black women to choose from and still marry a white woman. You can't have it both ways. Black women are tired of being by themselves. Now, that's with regards to the stats, why we wrote the book, because we saw the shortage of black men. But what we want to begin to find out is when did it start. You see, it's called the fourth-rate syndrome, studies show that black boys may be the best students in the country up until the fourth grade. So we wanted to find out what your son, a male student, was doing at the beginning of the third grade, then at the end of the seventh grade, and then measure the progress. Let me give you three examples. We had a little boy 5 years ago on an IVA reading test score at the 98th percentile in the country. In other words, a walking genius. That means only 2% male, female, white, or black had a higher score than he at the beginning of the third grade. At the end of seventh grade, the same boy now drops down to the 35th percentile. Engineer potential here, pimp or pusher now, score should have improved 5 years, instead they only improved 1.3. Two more examples. We had a little boy at the 92nd percentile. He dropped down to the 24th percentile, and his score has only improved 2.1. But let me give you the average example. We had a little boy at the 63rd percentile. He dropped down to the 4th percentile, and his score didn't improve a year, a month, a week, not even a day. There are three critical stages in black boys' development: infancy to 9, 9 to 13, and 13 to 18. You see, it's easy to see the negative behavior here when he's already dropped out, laid up on some street corner lacking direction. It's more difficult to see it around 9 years of age, when they begin to sit further in the back of the class, when they begin to ask less questions, when their ball becomes more important than their book, when they begin to cheat on their tests. We appeal to you to turn your sons and male students on early. Teach them how to read early. Teach them the beauty of being black and believing in God early. But many of us have waited, and we waited almost too late to develop black boys to be men. You know what I'm getting at. America spends $2,300 on Head Start. They spend $38,000 on prison. If Reagan wants to balance the budget, I can sure you can save about $36,000 per person. It's much easier to educate than it is to incarcerate. Now, you raise the question. How long do you stay in Head Start? A year? 2 years at the most? How long do you stay in prison? The rest of your life? Question number one. Question number two, does Head Start work? A 19-year study documents that Head Start works, but in prison, 85% of the inmates to get released go right back in. But as Jesse Jackson said, we have two choices. We can either send me to Penn State or State Penn. We have got to find ways to intervene. Now, we have a whole workshop just on the fourth grade syndrome. I now want to ask you, what are some of the reasons you feel to explain why black students, especially black boys, were doing so well K through 3, and now scores declining in the intermediate and upper grades? What explains? Yes.
Now changes abruptly in fourth grade from what might have been more right brain activities in the primary grade into all of a sudden all left brain activities.
Okay, so a change in learning style or methodology from the teacher, from a holistic learning style to a left brain. Okay, very good. Any others? Yes.
I think that there's a lot of rejection on the part of the female teachers in the classroom.
And the rejection increases with the upper grades? Why do you think it increases?
Because the student perhaps is his natural makeup, hyperactivity, and that sort of thing.
And that may be increasing. Well, it may be increasing because we're now expecting them to stay in school or stay in a chair even longer. Okay. Any others that contribute to this fourth grade syndrome? We have a change in learning style. We have the teacher's outlook on the students. What else? Yes.
We're culturally aware and differs significantly from what the teacher offers.
Okay. So the child's now become more aware of their culture and racial identity. Okay. Very good. Any others? The major reason you have not given yet, and maybe that's why this problem is still with us, Terry. First name is
Richard.
I'm sorry, Richard.
Peer group starts to form and become stronger.
That's unfortunate, Richard, that you said that, because as the age increases, peer pressure is on the increase, while parental involvement is on a decrease. I don't know who told parents when your child is older, they need less of your time rather than more. When I speak to Head Start parents, 80% of them are there. Elementary school, 30%. High school, almost a joke. We have to work on that. That's another workshop, too, on parenting all the way through, not just in those quote-unquote tender years. But the major reason, it's not on the board yet. Still looking for it. Yes. Go ahead.
I think, too, that young boys, and particularly young black boys, in the primary grades, they have many mother figures. And they have very few men figures, and particularly black male figures. And I think it makes a big difference come grade four.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think it's the major reason. And let me now give my first position. I sincerely believe that only men can make boys men. Now, don't misquote. I didn't say that a single female parent or female teacher cannot rear, educate, or child. But she need not do that by herself. What you call upon a father, her brother, an uncle, a male neighbor, a nephew, a coworker. There needs to be some men in our children's lives. I want to explain to me how a boy is going to grow up to be a man if he's never seen anything. In order to be anything, you must see it first. Remember in the earlier workshop, and I'll go through this very quickly, from the University of Michigan, we wanted to find out what was a major influence on children. We said 1950, it was home, school, church, peer group, and television. And then we gave you 1980, home was still number one, peer group in the number two position, television three, school dropped down to number four, church last on the list. Let's go back to my statement. My statement says that only men can make boys men. Now let's see what blind boys are going to find men. Let's first of all look at his home. 62% of all blind children live in a single-run household. It's a very good chance he would not find a man here. I'm going to hold off on the streets and drop down to television. Can you name me five positive adult black men on television outside the news? And you can't name Cosby because the show just started. Name me five. Outside the news. And you better not say George Jefferson. Very few black male role models on television. Now let's drop down to the schools. 83% of all elementary school teachers are women. 95% of all teacher aides are women. And when do men teach? After the critical fourth grade, or they're in the upper grade, or they're a PE teacher, the janitor, or the principal. Very few before the fourth grade for black boys need them the most. And lastly, the church. Most young people, men don't go to church. And the reason is we lied to them. First of all, we made Jesus Christ white. The man surely was not white. And we have a book called What Color Was Jesus to explain that. He had hair and texture of wool and feet the color of bronze. But secondly, the Lord's Prayer says on earth as it is in heaven. Young people and men want some action. They want some programs. If there are no programs in your church, they will see you later in heaven. As a result of not finding a man at home, few on television, few in school, and not wishing to attend church, the last place is the streets. And that's the problem. The streets do a very poor job making men. They do a better job making pimps, pushers, and a few basketball players. Their hero, Michael Jordan, has said there were a million brothers that won his job last year in the NBA. Of this million, only 400,000 will even make it to play high school ball. Of this 400,000, only 4,000 will make it to play college ball. Of this 4,000, only 35 will go to the coveted NBA. Of this 35, only 7 star. And the average life in the NBA is 4 years. You got a million brothers looking for 7 full-time jobs that last 4 years. This conspiracy is complex. It goes beyond the NBA. Even schools are in on it. What will be the first thing you see when you walk into a Cincinnati high school? A large trophy case. And others, even schools give more glory to their ball players than the scholars. That's said in the earlier workshop. Where the pep rally put on them. In other words, even schools, I can understand the NBA, but even schools give more glory to their ball players than the scholars. This conspiracy goes beyond the NBA, though. It goes beyond schools. Jesse Jackson is giving you the clue one more time. Is it not possible for a black man to be president? For a white woman to be president? For a black woman to be president? Is the club only reserved for European men? You didn't know that a white boy with a high school diploma makes more money than a white woman, black woman, or black man with a college degree? The motive for the conspiracy is clear. For the question of why is there a conspiracy, the answer is white male supremacy. In other words, white men are not afraid of women, black or white, because women have no power anywhere in this world. The threat to European men will come not from women, it will come from other men. And the best way to destroy black men is to destroy them as a boy. The motive is white male supremacy. But before you get comfortable blaming somebody else, let me make sure we're clear. On a conspiracy, there would always be two. You see, you have the active conspirators and you have the passive conspirator. See, it's like child abuse. There were always two. You have the father who does the beating, active. But you have the mother who turns her back. Passive. Isn't apathy, indifferent, low expectations, buying hot goods in the blind community, isn't that also part of a conspiracy? You have the active and you have the passive. In a conspiracy, there will always be two. Let me now give you the starting line. We'll start with the active one first and then move to the passive. Leading off, batting in the number one position, representing this country, institutional racism, batting first is the president. He bats in the number one position. Batting second, representing the Trilateral Commission, the Fortune 500, big business, David Rockefeller bats number two. Batting third, representing the military complex. You didn't know, black people, 12% of the population, one-third of the military,
and died 41% of the time in the Vietnam War?
The chief of staff.
Bat number three. Batting fourth, and I don't mean Marlon Brando. I mean the real godfather. Drugs running rampant in the black community. Don't, please don't deceive yourself. If America is the number one power in the world, they can police their borders and stop the drug traffic. These men and what they represent intentionally want to make sure the black boys never grow up to be men. But remember, they got some help from some of us who really like black boys, who may even have black boys at home, just didn't know any better. And so we bat number 5 through 9. Batting fifth, not all, but some. Some mothers who raise their daughters and love their sons. Batting sixth, some female teachers who don't understand that boys have different learning styles than girls. Batting seventh, representing the media in this country, shows like Gary Coleman and Webster. Shows that make me sick. Shows that illustrate that black men cannot raise intelligent black boys to be men. In other words, we need a white father for Gary Coleman and for Webster. It's all part of the media image. It goes all the way back to Tarzan, all the way back to Superman, all the way back to Rambo, to Rocky, all part of white male fantasy trying to control the world. It's all part of a scheme. Make sure you heard me. It's consistent with Superman, Tarzan, Santa Claus, the white father, all part of that scheme. Batting eight, the macho image, Mr. T, and we'll look at today someone like Prince or Magic Johnson or Isaiah Thomas. In other words, no need to study, just be macho, just be a superstar. In other words, Mr. T, Prince for entertainment, Isaiah Thomas or Magic for sports. And then last but not least, a black woman by the name of Kathy, who do anything for a man, and a black man by the name of Willie, who does not feel good about himself. You see your faces right now. Who's Kathy? You have to stay to the end to find out who's who. The starting lineup, Reagan. Rock, no, you don't know who Willie is, but we got a new theory for you now. We used to end with Donna and Kathy, but now we're going to give you the Eddie Willie theory. We have a new one. So we have Ronald Reagan, David Rockefeller, Casper Weinberger, the Godfather, some mothers. I didn't say all, some. Some mothers, some female teachers, the media image, macho and sports, and Kathy and Willie. These people and what they represent, intentionally or subconsciously, want to make sure that black boys never grew up to be men. Let's now look at the active ones first. I want to make sure we start in the right place. The conspiracy did not start with black mothers. It started somewhere else. We must start where it began. It began with active conspirators. I want to now look at them first. In looking at the active conspirators, I want to make sure we understand that these kind of terms don't make sense. We are not the minority. In other words, there are 4.5 billion people living in the world. Of this number, 80% of the world's population has color. That means only 20% of the world's population lacks color. Now, you tell me who's a minority. See, it's called the African tribe. Because all the way back, we're not the minority. We're only a minority. We allow ourselves to be divided up from our brothers and sisters in Nigeria, in Jamaica, in the United States. Look at this African triangle. After all these years, other than the way we're dressed, you can't tell who's who. There are 1 billion people living in China alone. And we are second, 500 living in Africa, 160 living in Central and South America, 40 million living here in the United States. We are not the minority. Now, the question is, how can so small control so much? That's why I respect them so much. Think about it. You have a gang. You have one gang with 80 people, another gang with 20, and the 20 going to win? The only way they can do that is by controlling the mind. Because whoever controls the mind will also control the body. Let's look at it. Let's break this down in half. What you come up with is 10% European women and 10% European men. See, it's not even 20. It's really 10% European men.
In other words, the Trilateral Commission, they want to control more than just their countries. They want to control the world.
And they have pulled it off. Now, there's a tremendous amount of pressure when you're this small trying to control so much. Now, maybe you can't understand it. It's been a long time. It goes back to Egypt for us, having that much power. But can you imagine that small number trying to control the world? A tremendous amount of pressure is on that small group with that much power. In other words, the first thing that men are taught to do is not to cry. According from their own Goldberg, the book is called The Hazards of Being a Male. The tremendous pressure when you're so small trying to control so much. The first thing that men are taught to do is not to cry. Think about it. Ever seen Ronald Reagan cry? John Wayne cry? They die with their boots on. They die in their saddle. They die like men. Now, any psychologist will tell you that crying may avoid suicide later. But as a result of European men, not crying, European men commit suicide more than anybody else. Black men who want so much to be like European men are very close second. European women are third, and the most sane person in America, she don't make no money, but stay close to God and her children and cry. Black women commit suicide. Let's see anybody else. Give yourselves a hand clap. In other words, if you think that money is the source of all your happiness, they make more money than anybody else. But they obviously are not happy. In other words, money may not be the key. Putting God and your children first may be the key. Poor people in America commit the less amount of suicide. First thing men are taught to do is not to cry. Second thing men are taught to do is to ignore pain. Got hypertension? Shake it off. Cancer? Shake that off too. Monday night football. Walter Payton goes off the field with a busted knee. Comes back on a half hour late in the Holocaust cells. Oh, what a man. The man was crazy to go back on the field. We see men are taught to be macho, to ignore pain. Now women, when women's finger bleeds, to the doctor's office. Women take care of themselves. But now men, you guys know that the studies have now documented that when men are married, they live longer. That's an insult to intelligence. It means that I cannot live long by myself. I got to leave my mama and go to my wife. Because if I don't, I'm probably going to smoke cigarettes, drink liquor, and eat a lot of pork on the streets. But with women, annual checkup, that's what they encourage men to do. Drink a regular amount of water and eat a salad on a regular basis. What am I getting at? European women are so oppressed. European women live to 77 years of age. Black women live to 75 years of age. European men die at 69 years of age. And black men die at 64.8. Albert, you and I die before the first Social Security check. That law needs to be changed. The lower bar, we aren't living long to collect on the payment. This is sad. I'm gonna die 10 years before my wife. This is not theoretical. It's not just my son here. It's my life here and your life. Can I not live as long as my wife? 10 years before her? Men are first of all taught not to cry. Secondly, they're taught to ignore pain. And then last but not least, they're taught to bring home the bacon. What I say as a vegetarian, to bring home the fruit and the vegetables. In other words, to bring home the money. Ronald Reagan knows this. Rockefeller knows this. That the best way to destroy black men is to deny them the opportunity to work. You know what I'm getting at, because Bill Moyers didn't tell you that was Vanishing Black Family documentary. One of every three men in this country, black or white, ends in a divorce in 18 months. Now, you see, it used to be if you got a divorce, something was wrong with you. But when you have a stat this time, something must be going on in society. I now want to explain what that is. When America believes in agriculture, America believes in extended family. When America believed in the factory industrialism, America believed in the nuclear family. But now that America believes in the computer, now America believes in the single-parent family. Make sure you see my analysis. When the economy changed, the family structure changed. There was more than love in these relationships. There was some money involved here. Our grandparents worked the fields together, had economic reason to stay together, and so they did. In the factory, man works in factory, woman takes care of children. Economic reason again to stay together. But in this new economy, where you now have women working just as much, if not more, than men, you now hear women telling men, I don't need you. Got my own job. Do what I want to do when I want to do it. And we are now doing it very well and by ourselves. You know the number one song in America a couple of years ago, Ain't Nothing Going On But the Rent. If you want to be with me, you got to have a J-O-B. It's all about money. All about money. When the economy changed, the family structure changed. And so now we have a lot of people making plenty of money and lonely. They place money before family. You see, black men want to do what white men do. Buy their family a house in the suburbs, two cars, and once a year go down to Orlando for Disney World vacation. And when black men can't do that, they don't feel they're worthy enough to stay. Now you see, the problem is there are two responses black women can give to black men when they're out of work. Now, the first response some women say is, well, if you ain't working, you got to go. If you ain't working, you got to go. That's a mistake. Because black men don't hire nor fire, nor control the means of production. Now, before black men say, that's right, brother, you tell them. Please, brothers, quit assuming that black women took our jobs away. Because black women also do not hire nor fire. We are being played off against each other for some crumbs. We recommend the second response. For black women to say to that man, well, if you ain't working, can you at least go back to school? Can you Can you at least learn to steal or at least make dinner or wash dishes well gone? But the problem is there are very few black men that look to black women for definition of manhood. Black men, as I said earlier, want to do what white men do, and that means be the breadwinner. What I'm getting at is we're going to have to redefine what it means to be a man. Because if being a man means being a provider, with 25% of black men out of work, that's a suicidal definition. You see, if I lose my job tomorrow, I'm still a man. As long as I'm responsible, treat my wife correctly, raise my children, that's responsibility. I'm not going to allow my employer to reduce my masculinity. I need to define what being a man is. And I think it's a perfect balance between the mental, the spiritual, and the physical. Not being a breadwinner, but a balance between the mental, physical, and the spiritual. Isn't it interesting? You have two black men. Both lose their jobs. One black man resorts to crime, leaves his home. He's been reduced by the society. The other black man sells newspapers, sells peanuts, does whatever he can to take care of his family. Same economic situation, but a different set of values. We have to work on that. A new definition can resolve this problem. I'm not belittling money. You have to have money living in America, but that's not the criteria for man. Boys make babies. Men take care of them. That's the definition. One more comment here. I mentioned earlier in our past workshop on the peer group, let me share with you here this dichotomy where you have the mental over here and you have the physical over here. See, a real problem is our boys have a difficult time finding a balance in the middle. I mentioned earlier homosexuality, and the figure is one of every 9 men in this country are homosexual. It's going to increase. And the reason is because we've been so skilled to the physical, being macho, that when our boys want to be on the honor roll, they're labeled sissies. Want to be involved in fine arts? Labeled sissies. Want to be open, honest, communicative? Labeled sissies. When you label something long enough, you begin to act that way. So you have the homosexuals over here, and you have the athletes, the machos, over here. Tremendous dichotomy between these two. We have got to find some men that can teach black boys and Hispanic boys the balance between the physical and the mental. There's going to be too much pressure over here. It's hard to find the balance, and women can't teach this. Only a man can do this. We need more black men who can do both of these areas, physically balanced and mentally balanced, and spiritual and the mental. Comments, questions about what is a man? We've been looking at male behavior. Any comments or questions? Yes, go ahead.
Explain what you meant by saying women raise their daughters.
Matter of fact, I think it's probably the next point. Matter of fact, it is. Praise the Lord. Let's go to the next point. See, we were looking at the active conspirators, and we were looking at what the effect that causes on us in terms of male behavior. And we may not be able to control or to change Reagan, Rockefeller, Weinberg, but your question we can change. We can look at some mothers. And I said some, not all. The rumor is that some mothers raise their daughters and love their sons. My boy always loved his mama. 40 years of age, still at home with you. That needs to stop. Your boy is not yours. He is a future husband, a future father, and needs to be raised that way. Now, what do I mean by raised? Teach your son how to cook, to make up his own bed, to clean up his own bathtub room because you raised your daughter. On the honor roll, every mom is here. Go to church with you every Sunday, and she can cook, sew, and clean. All but then we have your son. Ain't never seen the honor roll. He plays basketball all evening long. Never goes to church and can't boil a hot dog. The rumor is we have some, not all, raising their daughters and loving their sons. Now, I know the historical reason. The historical reason is our societies always try to destroy black men. The lynching. So black mothers always want to overprotect their sons. What's the reason today? I know the KKK is on the rise. What's the reason today? Is it because your own black man didn't stay? You now replace your man with your son. Your son is not yours. He's a future husband, a future father, and needs to be raised that way. Quit telling these 9-year-old boys they're the man of the house. Ain't no 9-year-old boy ready to be no man of the house. But because you told him that, he now begins to wonder. When you then bring over your man for the evening, Mom, I thought I was the man of the house. Why are you bringing him over? You can't have it both ways. If he's going to be the man of the house, quit bringing your boyfriend over on Saturday night. You know what's sad, though? These brothers think what they can do with their mama, they can do with their teacher, their coach, and everybody else. In other words, living at home with you in a $100 pair of gym shoes, $80 pair of a Gucci handbag. In other words, these boys have mastered how to manipulate their mama. And they think what they can do with you, they can do with everybody else. Only to find out what you let them get away with, nobody else does. In other words, 90% of all teenage pregnancy programs account for the women. We have teenage pregnancy running rampant. But as far as the last time I looked, it took two to make a baby. But 90% of the programs let the brothers off the hook. The real question is, who is going to teach blind boys to be responsible? And you don't start when he makes a baby. In other words, the real question is, who's going to teach blind boys to be responsible for his personal hygiene, for his clothes, for his chores, for his room, for his siblings, for his allowance, for his studies, for his tours, for his schedule? And then his sex life. You don't start responsibility at 16. It starts very early. For example, when I was growing up, my father opened up a mutual fund account for me. And every year my birthday explained to me, this is how much money you have in your account. But if you make a baby, all your money is going to take care of your child. Should it be any different? If I enjoy making it, should I also take care of it? So my oldest son was 15. I've been doing the same thing with him, the 9-year-old and the 15-year-old. So he told me last year, he said, Daddy, this money looks so good to me, I just decided I'm not ever making me a baby. I'm keeping all my money to myself. But the point is, the boy understands responsibility. He understands if I make a baby, you will take care of me. There are mothers who know their son impregnated some girl on the same block, and they say, well, boys will be boys. They will be whatever you let them be. I want to pause now. Explain that. Why are some mothers raising their daughters and loving their sons? Did you grow up in a household where you did more work if you had a sister than your brothers did? Why is that? And you know what else I believe? I believe that child rearing has a lot to determine in marriage. In other words, marrying a mama's boy is a very critical mistake. Because they can always go back to their mama. Son, your room is just the way it always was. Got your favorite pie of cake whenever you want to get there. It is terrible marrying a mama's boy. Common. My water break. Give me some feedback on mothers with their son. What do you think about now?
It's devastating. It's on target.
Any other concern about mothers and their son?
The boys will be boys is real bad.
Right.
That's exactly where you keep them as boys.
Right.
Where it's possible they will grow to be men. Or more apt to be anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of mothers...
You know, the shortage of men in the church, that can be corrected by taking our sons to church. The sons can stay home. It's optional for them, but not the daughters. In terms of playing outside, daughters in at a certain hour. Sons all night long, double standards. Make the daughters play, but not the sons. See, my point is, if black women are coming right to you, if black women know what problems they have with their own black man, why don't they correct it with your son? See, if you know what the problems are with black men, your little son, that's somebody else's husband. All what you know needs to be done, put that into your son. Right, why perpetuate? If you really love your sister. If you really love your sisters, correct the problem with your son. Yes, sir.
This is hard to do, bro, because the mother loves the child so much, and it hurts the mother to whoop the child and see the child hurt, so the child will continue to rule.
But that's interesting. They love their daughters, too, but they whoop their daughters.
Phenomenon is that the mothers are also spoiling some daughters with these
issues. True, but you don't spoil some daughters, and we don't have enough of these men there to do it.
Yeah.
Father,
yeah.
That's my day. In other words, it's very interesting. See, when the father's there, see, it's something about a black man or a father seeing this male, his same size, sitting on his sofa, eating up all the food. Boy, you gotta go. But see, his daughter can stay there as long as she wants. But see, the mother knows the daughter. And so the mother, you gotta go too. See, mothers make the daughters go, and fathers make the sons go. But when the father's not there, there's nobody to make the son go.
Okay.
Yes, one more, then we got to go on. Yes, ma'am.
I also think it has something to do with the norms that are set in the system, too. And we try to emulate those as black people. Think, for example, I was brought up on a farm, and everybody worked together. But then in society now, says the male has a role, the girl has a role. So the parents try to perpetuate that.
Correct. And what's bad about that is you can't fault the black man who you married not wanting to wash dishes. He wasn't forced to wash dishes at home. So you can't again, Foster, when he gets when he marries you, have to teach him early. Next issue, female teachers. We're also very concerned about female teachers. Remember, the exact percentage is 83% in the elementary grade. The number of black children in public schools, 17%. But black children are 41% of all the special ed children. Now, 17 doesn't equal 41. LD, learning disabled, EMR, educable mentally retarded, BD, behavior disorder. It gets worse. If a black child is going to be labeled special ed, 85% of the time it's going to be a black boy. Why is it not 50-50 black boy, black girl? Well, the reason may not be with just black children, Bill Moyers and Patrick Monahan. It may be up here at the top. It may be that female teachers may not know that boys are different than girls. You all didn't know that, didn't you? That boys are different than girls. I only want the women to answer. The men know they're different. I want to now hear the women to share with us, what are some of the differences between boys and girls in the classroom? Because only when you know what the differences are can you then change your methodology to meet the needs of their learning style. Yes. Yeah.
Okay, if the boys are more active, what
else? More physical.
More physical? Okay, more aggressive? What else?
Come on, Dad, you don't have the boys to play with you.
I think the boys are more egotistical.
Okay, so a large ego?
Large ego.
Okay, and you have to play with that. Any other?
They're not quite as willing to please either as little girls.
Okay, so less cooperative. And we just want to add a few more because of time. 3 and 4, we find the boys more aggressive, are more athletically inclined, have a shorter attention span, a slower maturation rate, as you said, are less cooperative, are larger than the girl, influenced more by their peer group, more advanced gross motor than fine motor, not as neat as girls, are louder than girls, like wearing hats on their head, have a different walk, have a larger ego, and last but not least, play the dozen more than girls. You know how many teachers, especially white teachers, white female teachers, don't know what the dozens are? Don't know what signifying is. Now, remember, we live in a world controlled by men. Males want to find out who's the best, or as they say, who's the baddest. Now, remember, in school, the rule is you can't fight, but they still want to find out who's the best. They create a new game called dozens, signifying. It is a verbal word game of the most prized person in the black community. Now, who is the most prized person in the black community? Your mama. We're going to talk about your mama right now. I saw your mama on the railroad track, looked at her and said, ooh, get back. It's a verbal word game. Now, the game is designed, it's a verbal word game of the most prized person, your mama. Now, if you break down and start fighting, you're being kicked out of school, so I automatically win. If you break down and start crying, again, I automatically win. Now, before I go on, do you know how many black boys have been suspended or placed in special ed because they were playing a dozen? Do you know how many teachers don't understand those same two black boys who were playing a dozen, really getting down to those mamas, were the best of friends 2 seconds later? They didn't understand the culture. Now, don't misquote me. I'm not condoning the dozens nor black age, but they both exist. And if you want to move a child from one to the other, it may not be what you say. It may be how you're saying it. In other words, black English, first day of school. 5-year-old girl walked into your classroom, speaking what she heard, black English. When you condemn the language, you've done more than condemn the language. You're now destroying a child's self-esteem. The language is legitimate, has different rules to it. It exists, legitimate rules to it. And if you want to move a child from black English to standardized English, you don't condemn them. You make them feel good where he is. If she went on Albert, there's some skill to playing a dozen. I'm a former teacher, and I had some very good dozen players. There's some skills to playing a dozen. First of all, you have to have an expanding vocabulary. You have to have the ability to make words rhyme. You have to have quick thinking skills. You have to be comfortable public speaking. And I knew that. So I used to tell Willie, my best student, Willie, if you were that good playing a dozen, making words rhyme, vocabulary, all the like, I want you to be the MC of all my programs. I want you in my drama department or my spelling bee team. In other words, I stroked him. I made him feel good where he was. And then he was willing to give me those skills in my classroom. But the real issue is, do we let these boys know we respect their culture? Because if you condemn it, they will fight you every step of the way. And you know what else they will do? They will also fight you in what we call the showdown. The showdown between black boys and female teachers. You see, black boys don't know when they're men. And black men have not made it clear to them when they become men. So they think taking a female teacher one-on-one is going to make them a man. Especially around fourth grade. From fourth grade on,
They want to find out who's in charge of the Klan. It's called a showdown. There are numerous options in a showdown between a black male and a female teacher. Showdown number one. She says, sit down, very unassertively. Well, Willie may sit down, but it may be late on in the afternoon. Willie wins showdown number one. Showdown number two. She responds to Willie some of the time, but not all the time. She's inconsistent. Well, I believe Willie wins each one of those. She does not respond to. Showdown number three. She says, I'm going to suspend you or place you in special ed. We may lose to the assistant principal or special ed placement, but he did not do what she said. He wins showdown number three. Showdown number four. She says very assertively, sit down now. You know how the good ones do it? They look at you. Strong eye contact. They look you back in line. And she wins showdown number four. Showdown number five. She responds to Willie each and every time. She's consistent. And she's winning each one of those showdowns. Then the last one. A friend of mine in Chicago told me she had a boy who thought he was so bad, he was not going to stand up. He was going to run past sitting down. He's going to make her nervous. He's going to look at her and smile at her. So every time Audrey looked at her, he looked back and smiled. But then Audrey looked back with the same strength and smiled. This went on all day long. Willie looked and smiled. Audrey looked back and smiled. At the end of class, some of the words, Willie came to Audrey and said, okay, I understand that you are in charge of this class. But the reason is she's done three things well. She, first of all, loves him, and he knows that. She respects him, and he knows that. And she also respects his culture, and he knows that. Because of that, there is no showdown, because he knows that she is in charge of the class. What I'm getting at, to return back to this, if you know that boys have a shorter attention span, what should that do to your lesson? Make it shorter or make it more interesting? If you understand that boys are more advanced gross motor than fine motor, what should you allow more in your classroom? More hands-on learning activities. In other words, my point is, if you understand that boys have different learning styles, rather than taking them out of your class and putting them in special ed, why don't you alter your learning style, your methodology? But you know what I'm saying? Most principals know that 5% of their teachers make over 30% of the referrals. If that's the case, why remove the child? Why don't you remove the teacher? How is a child doing so well in third grade with a good teacher and now labeled EMR in fourth grade? It may not be the child. It may be the teacher. Truly a shame we can't stay on this longer on learning style. Hyperactive, that's a value judgment. If you know what hyper is, God must have told you what normal is. Hyper is a value judgment. It may not be that black boys are hyperactive. It may be the lesson plan is simply too slow. Think about that the next time you want to place a child in special ed. Some other issues. I want to wrap up with regards to what is the conspiracy to destroy black boys. I believe the conspiracy is made up of white male supremacy, institutional racism, lack of black male role models, the male socialization process, parental apathy and double standards, low teacher expectations, a female designed classroom, a distorted media, and an influential peer group. In terms of the question, what is the conspiracy? I know you can't take all those down the way I gave them to you, so please read the book. I won't repeat them again, but those are the major factors that make up what is the conspiracy to destroy black boys. Male supremacy, institutional racism, lack of male role models, male socialization process, parental apathy, raising their daughters and loving their sons, low teacher expectations, a female-designed classroom, a distorted media, and an influential peer group. Now, what I want to begin to look at is, what can the home do to stop the conspiracy to destroy black boys? It's not enough to describe it. Remember, the book is called Countering the Conspiracy to Destroy Black Boys. I want to look at it from the home, from the classroom, from the community, and then we'll give you the Donna Willie theory, or the Donna Cabby theory and the Eddie Willie theory. In terms of the home, in order to stop this conspiracy, we must first of all become aware. I believe the first way to solve any problem is to know the problem exists, to study. We have got to study. And then we, especially women, have got to admit that boys need role models, especially male role models. And after we admit that, then we need to identify some male role models that will play that kind of position with our boys. And please don't lie to me and say you don't know it. In other words, on your block, in your extended family, where you work at, please don't say you don't know at least one positive black man. In other words, just because a biological father is not there does not mean there's not some other black men available. We believe in extended family concept. We also want you to set a contract on what this man will do with your son on an ongoing, regular basis. And for the fathers, please quit taking your son only to the ball game and to the zoo. It's amazing. Fathers take their sons to the zoo and to a ball game. When it's time to go to the grocery store or to the barbershop, go with your mom. In other words, I believe that black boys on an awful lot by seeing you in very natural situations, at the oil change, at the barbershop, just talking smack on the street. So please quit thinking that you can only interact with your children and some child-centered activities. They need to see what you do on an ongoing, regular basis. We must also work on black boys' fine motor development. In other words, early on in kindergarten, we're labeling black boys as being behind because the girls work with crayons, pencils, and scissors. The boys have been working with trucks. We have to work on black boys' fine motor development. We also have to work on a non-sexist household. In other words, teach your son how to cook, how to sew, how to clean. We also recommend you teach your son sex education and before 12 years of age. The studies show we're teaching children sex ed after they've already started. It should be before, not after. They've already made a baby after 12 and 13. We have to work on that. We must also monitor the peer group. You know, good parents have always done a number of things well with the peer group. First of all, good parents know who their children's friends are. They invite them over to get to know them better. And many times, parents program the peer group to make sure their child runs the right group. My parents enrolled me on a track team. I had to run cross country, indoor, and outdoor track. Rather than running around a gang, they had me running around a track. Our parents did that intentionally to make sure. Good parents also monitor television. TV cannot be turned on by itself. Quit blaming the television set. We must also look at us. And then last but not least, we must listen to our children. Many times they tell me, my parents don't listen to me. That's why the peer group is winning. The peer group listens. Many times we don't. You know, the average father only spends 7 minutes with his children. The average mother, 34 minutes. It's a tragedy. But if that's all you're spending, make sure it's quality time. Make sure you're listening to them. We recommend these strategies for the home. For the school, we recommend the following. First of all, again, we always believe in study. You must first of all become aware there's a conspiracy to destroy black boys. After that, we must increase male teachers. My first desire is to increase male staff. My second one would be those in the upper grades at least for 1 year to teach in the lower grades. In other words, what I recommend is that we have more black men before fourth grade, or at least in the intermediate division. In addition to that, if we cannot get this, we want more black role models coming into the school. If we cannot get them on staff, the least we can do is invite black men in. I encourage black men to volunteer in your local school because the men are not there, so we need to have you there. In addition to that, we also want to change some of the changes of triangle, to change the methodology, to begin to use a right brain learning activity. In other words, more hands-on learning objects in terms of fine arts, artifacts, pictures, and the like. We also recommend that we emphasize academics over athletics. We must give more glory to academic achievement than we do athletic achievement. These are the strategies we recommend for the school. To one, study it, increase male teachers, increase role models, look at a right brain learning style, and emphasize academics over athletics. Lastly, for solutions, we also want to look at the community. The community has a program to destroy black boys. We must have one to protect and develop black boys. One program is the Boy Scouts. It's an excellent program. It teaches black boys skills. But the problem is the Boy Scout master may be homosexual, may not know black history. The Boy Scouts may be nothing more than a junior army, but it's an excellent program. It teaches black boys skills, but it may not do anything else. Another program is Big Brother, an excellent concept. It gives black males a role model, but the Big Brother may be homosexual, may not know black history. If so, the conspiracy is going to continue. What we recommend is you blend Boy Scouts skills, blend Big Brother's role models into an African program called Simba, S-I-M-B-A, Simba. It's the African word for young lion. And we now have 17 Simba chapters across the country. These are programs where black men are not talking about the problem, they are working on it. These are black men who organize themselves to work with black boys to teach them skill, give them a role model, teach them black culture, and the major objective to go through the rite of passage into manhood. At my church in Chicago, we have a single program where in February during Black History Month or during December during Kwanzaa, we take our boys who've gone through our criteria and through a special ceremony called the Rites of Penance. I repeat, you have some black men talking about what they're going to do. You have some black men organized to begin to work on that kind of issue. We recommend SEMA. It brings all three of those together. Closing point, and then we'll open up for some questions. Donna and Kathy, I mentioned at the very outset that one of every two husbands physically abuses his wife. Now, many of those problems only with the men who did the beating. There's more to it than that. You see, any respectable woman would make it very clear to her man, you put a hand on me, and either I'm leaving or you better not go to sleep. There are two kind of women in America, and they go by the names of Donna and Kathy. You see, I sincerely believe this. I believe that men know who to be and who not to. I believe it. And I believe that men are not going to respect women until women, first of all, respect themselves. And there are two kind of women in America, Donna and Kathy. Now, Donna feels very good about herself. She would like to have a man, but she don't have to have one. I mean, the sun would still be shining. God would still be first in her life. Donna wants one. She ain't got to have one. But then you get Kathy. Take a minute away, comes through the door with another woman, with a bottle, with a bottle of fist. All Kathy wants is a man, and a half a man will do. I want all the Catholics to raise them. You know, I've yet across the country see a sister admit to me, she's a Catholic. You know what they tell me? They say, Juanza, well, I'm a Donna during the weekday, but I'm a Catholic on the weekend. Well, I'm Donna summertime and a Catholic the other half. It's hard being Donna in America when you have two women for every one man. It's easy to lower your standards. If you want to be a Catholic in America, the theory goes like this. For every sister we can get to quit acting like Catholics, and to begin to act like Donna, what this means is less Kathy and more Donna. As a result of having fewer Kathy and more Donna, we would have fewer brothers taking advantage of women like Kathy that respect more women like Donna. I am tired of women always blaming the brothers. The last time I looked, you still determined who gets your phone number, who takes you out, and every step along the way. It's hard being a Donna in America. If you want to be a Donna, then maybe some lonely Friday and Saturday night. But if you believe in you, you'll have peace of mind. If you want to be a Donna in America, it means you go back to school, get off of welfare, learn you a skill for a career to take care of yourself. If you want to be a Donna in America, it means you will quit watching them soap operas all day long, especially all of my children, and begin to take care of your own. If you want to be a Donna in America, it means you will quit eating those cookies and chocolates all evening long. You know, the rumor is the older women get, the bigger you get. Watch what you eat and exercise. And then last but not least, you want to be a Donna in America, you need to put God first in your life. You didn't know? It takes longer for boys to grow up. And some boys never grow up. But rather than marrying a boy as a Catholic making a mistake, we encourage you to wait. But while you're waiting, don't complain. Keep developing yourself. So when the brothers finally get ready, you'll be ready too. A good marriage still takes two and not one. Now, as you well know, when we used to end with the Donna Catholic theory, but the women got on our case in Juwanza. If you're going to talk about the conspiracy to destroy black boys, don't end it talking about us. End it where you started, with the brothers. So now I want to give you to Eddie Willie Fist. Eddie is dedicated to my father. His name is Eddie, and I believe he's a very strong example of a black man. There are two kind of men in America, Eddie and Willie. Willie makes babies. Eddie takes care of them. In other words, Willie believes it's not the quality, it's the quantity. Willie has made a lot of babies. Eddie believes in not only taking care of them, he hugs them. He believes that men should hug their children. Works with them on their homework. Eddie takes care of them. Willie makes them. Point number one. Point number two, Willie only works, and maybe not even then, outside the house. Eddie works inside and outside. In other words, Willie may cut the grass. He may rake leaves, but he definitely is not working inside the house because men work outside and women work inside, but not Eddie. Eddie believes in whatever it takes. Washing dishes, making dinner, whatever it takes. And then last but not least, Willie is very insecure. And so Willie verbally and physically abuses his woman, but not Eddie. Eddie's very insecure. In other words, Eddie encourages a woman to go back to school, to get a promotion on her job. Eddie encourages his woman to go to church. You know what I even heard? Eddie goes to church with her. And the reason is Eddie is his wife's best friend. And because of that, he understands that putting his woman down is not the key. The key is feeling good about yourself. When you feel good about yourself, there's no need to put anybody down. I want all the Donnas and all the Eddies to stand up and give yourselves a very strong round of applause. Thank you very, very much.
And now, this hour is set in the United States.